All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime. It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Matinee Talk, episode 44. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot, with me as always,
Julian Owens.
All right, folks, today we got a busy day. We're going to get into the box office, a little bit of movie news, a little bit of reviews from some films we've had, and then our main topic, we'll talk Birds of Prey. But before anything else, Julian, what do we got with the box office?
So with the box office this past weekend for Valentine's weekend, we have number one, Sonic the Hedgehog, bringing in $58 million for his opening weekend. That's not bad, by the way.
Mm-mm.
Very good movie. We'll talk about that later. Coming in at number two is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of the One Harley Quinn, with 17.2, bringing its domestic total to 59.4. Number three is The Photograph with $12.3 million, also its opening weekend. Then we also have number four coming in, The Photograph, which is $12.1 million for its opening weekend. And rounding out number five is Bad Boys for Life with 11.4, bringing its domestic total to a little over $181 million.
So Fantasy Island was three.
Yeah, Fantasy Island was three. Sorry, I didn't say that. But yeah, Fantasy Island with its opening weekend, yeah, was three. Which, we'll talk about that later. I have questions. I want to know how you felt about it.
Yeah.
So we'll discuss that later.
All right, so for Blu-ray release dates, we already talked about this week's releases on the last podcast. So coming out next week, we have Knives Out, Color Out of Space, and Frozen 2. The only one of those three I haven't seen is Frozen 2.
It was all right.
Knives Out, I'll be picking up.
I'm definitely picking up Knives Out. I haven't seen the color film, but for sure, for Frozen 2... if you're a Frozen fan, sure, you can buy it. I was a fan of the first one. I'm not a fan of this one. Just is a repetitive, in my personal opinion. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to touch it. So, yeah, that's my personal opinion about Frozen 2.
Cool.
Now, well, we're going to go right into movie news.
Yeah. So, what's our big news?
For, again, us Batman fans, we talked about it, that they started production on our previous episode. Well, last week, they gave us a very, very small teaser to Robert Pattinson's Batman suit.
It's a little short video, and he's covered in, like, a red silhouette light. And, yeah, you do have Michael Giacchino's score in the background, which I was actually... Sounded really good. And then you get some shots of the cowl and the chest. And to be honest, you can't really make out a whole lot of it. But some people have gone in and done, like, lighting edits, and I've seen a few where they, like, do the background white and then try to fill in his color. What are your overall first impressions of the suit?
Everything I expected. I figured that they were going to go more the techie Arkham series suit. I don't know why, but I like the collar. I don't know why. It's a little bit like Gotham by Gaslight comic, which is pretty interesting. I enjoyed that. The only thing that I have a question about is the bat symbol on his chest.
So it's pieces of a gun.
It is. Now, is it a piece of the gun that killed his parents, or is it a piece of a gun that he just decided that's going
to
be...
I've heard that he wanted to, like, really project out there his, like, rule about guns. So I don't know.
So that's the only thing that I have a question about. We really didn't get to see the cape. His cowl.
The cowl, so you see, like, stitching, like, it's like leather.
I was going to say, you go from the steel plates that we get to leather, which was confusing at first, but I like the fact that we really couldn't see his eyes. I guess that's just because of the red silhouette.
And the jawline was strong.
Very strong. Very strong.
I mean, those are a couple things that a Batman has to have, is gotta have a good jawline, so he's got that, so...
The only thing is, I didn't really notice the ears that much.
No, you can't see the ears. See them. And so that's why I'm wondering, are they sticking with the short ears? Or are they going back to long ears?
I don't know. And because this is the early stages of Batman, I wonder which one are they going to go with. It's going to be interesting to see. The little teaser that we got with this suit, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I can't wait to see the remaining Entertainment Weekly reveal of the Bat Suit, which will be not until probably next year. But for what it's worth, I love what I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next. So Harrison Ford, for the first time since Rise of Skywalker, kind of had a little speaking point about his... He was asked a question during his Call of the Wild press tour. Okay. And, of course, asked a question on whether or not Han Solo was a Force ghost. And this was his reply. A Force ghost? I don't know what a Force ghost is. Don't tell anyone. I'm not talking loud enough for your recorder. I have no fucking idea what a Force ghost is. And I don't care.
When he said he is done with Star Wars, he is absolutely done.
And he followed that up with, well, they asked him, like, well, why did you come back? And he said, well, when JJ asks you to come do something, he can be very persuasive. And to be honest, it would give me one more scene with Adam Driver. So.
Oh, okay. He really did it because he wanted to do one scene with Adam Driver. Yeah. That's what it was. We talked about this multiple times over, not in the podcast, but just in general with Johnny and I's conversations. Harrison Ford at this point doesn't give a shit. When he was on Jimmy Kimmel, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel 2 weeks, something like that. He was on there and they were trying to do quote unquote science about who shot first, him or Greedo. And he obviously was like, I don't give a fuck. I know I shot first. That's what it was told to me. That's all I care about. Let's move on. And so... Harrison, he just doesn't give a shit. He's just like, I'm over Star Wars. Can we move on from this? So I'm fine with it. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. So the only other really, not news, but we did have several trailer drops in the last week. To kind of go over a few. The French Dispatch, the new Wes Anderson.
I'm not really a Wes Anderson fan, but I'm really digging the trailer.
I mean, I dig Wes Anderson, and he's got the huge ensemble, and it's quirky, and you're going to have some good music, and it'll be a good time at the theater, so I'm definitely looking forward to The French Dispatch. Some other ones, The Green Knight, which is a new A24 flick, which it kind of seems out of their wheelhouse because it's a fantasy kind of like a King Arthur almost type deal. And then the last one was they're bringing back The Hunt. It's coming out on March 13th, and there's a new trailer for it. Basically putting out there that basically the trailer states like the movie so whatever that it almost didn't get released.
And I was just going to say, from the trailer that you watched, because I didn't watch the new trailer for The Hunt, they gave us new scenes...
It gave a few like moments with some character dialogue.
Okay.
Talking about the rich, the poor, things like that. And then it was almost like they were like, oh, you thought you could
get rid of us.
Now we're gonna market it even harder. I saw, because I didn't know, and I saw it at the Draft House, and then I was like, wait a second, and then I went and looked it up and it was like, yep, it's getting released. And like Less than four weeks.
Yeah, four or five weeks. That's okay. All right. I'm down to watch it. I was down to watch it until they said that they were pulling it. So I'm down. Yeah, that's pretty much everything that's else about movie news.
Everything with movie news.
I just wanted to say highlight to Bong Joon-ho for winning Best Director and Best Picture for the Academy.
I have my print on the wall. Very, very, very happy because I honestly didn't think the Academy was going to do that because
at all.
Usually they do not pick films like that, and historically they don't. That's why history was made last Sunday.
First foreign film to ever win a Best Picture Oscar, and it was phenomenal. I was confused but excited at the same time. Landmark win for Bong Joon-ho. I congratulate you and your team for this film. I'm looking forward to the rest of it, but hopefully this doesn't make the only foreign film to win an Academy.
Yeah, and I really hope that, because usually when a film wins Best Picture, people seek it out.
Yes.
Like, I heard a story that there's like a public library in Utah that's the only place people can rent movies in that town. And there's like 100+ person wait list to rent Parasite. And I was like, well, wow. All right. But hopefully it makes people who don't normally watch foreign films or aren't used to watching a film with subtitles get used to it and maybe seek some other good foreign titles out.
Like he said in the Golden Globes, once you get past the 1-inch subtitles, you'll mm-hmm. be introduced to a way better genre of film that you just are titled to in America. And I promise you, it is absolutely amazing. Like, I was surprised. To that point, because Bong Joon-ho won for Parasite last year, just want to have a quick question. Do you think that films like Roma will now get a chance to basically win Best Picture this year? Or it still might be a long time before that happens?
I think we'll see more nominated. I don't know if... Because the number of foreign films that get wide releases in the U.S. versus the giant number of English films that get wide release. And I just think that their press tour and their marketing did so well in those last like 2 or 3 weeks leading up to the Oscars mm-hmm. that literally every time he did a speech for anything, I think it was making all of the Oscar voters who normally don't watch the foreign films at all, like, oh, maybe I need to check this out.
You're right.
And so at that point, it became fresh in their mind, whereas 1917, they've been sitting on since Christmas. And then so Parasite, like I said in an Instagram post after it won, like, after I saw it back in Fantastic Fest in September, I was telling people, like, you need to see this movie.
You were even telling us on the podcast.
And I knew because Tim League loved it so much, he was going to push it hard at Draft House. And I just didn't know if other theaters were going to follow suit. But luckily, a bunch of theaters did follow suit over the course of the winter. And then, like I said, as he started winning those awards in January, and it seemed like between him and his translator, people just fell in love with them, like their speeches, and he's very witty and funny. So, good marketing good on him.
Now, real quickly, before we go into Birds of Prey and do a movie review, I guess we can both say one movie that we watched this past weekend and just talk about it briefly. I'll let you pick whichever movie, even though I would love to hear your terrible review of one of these that you've watched.
All right. So I kind of already ranted on Downhill last podcast, even though I hadn't seen it yet, but just knowing that it wasn't going to live up to Force Majeure, I'll just briefly say it wasn't as bad as I thought, okay. But it was not good. Because I thought it was going to be a dumpster fire. And Dreyfuss is really good in the role. Farrell's way out of place, but I already knew that. So
I was about to say Farrell was the worst part of the film.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Fantasy Island, I gave it 1.5 stars.
It was really that bad?
I saw it in the afternoon yesterday with a buddy, and you know, I dig the Blumhouse films, and you know, usually he's like 8 out of 10 of them are decent.
Right.
This one, not so much. It's fairly interesting for the first like 2/3, like the premise, but the acting's not great. And then once you get in, the scares are non-existent, so it's not scary.
So it's not scary at all. Okay.
But then once you get to like the last 30, 40 minutes, it just goes stupid. Like, just straight up stupid. Them trying to be smart by oh, we're going to have somebody that was pulling the strings and twisting the tail, and it wasn't what you thought it was. And I don't know, that just took away some of, like, the appeal from, like, the old school TV show. And then this movie of these six people who have nothing to do with each other. They just won this contest where they each get to have their one fantasy.
They always want it.
Okay. Yeah. And Michael Pena is doing this really weird Spanish accent. Like, he's like overdoing it to almost sound like an Antonio Banderas or something.
Oh no.
But he doesn't, because it sounds like he's trying.
Oh.
Like his Hispanic accent in like Ant-Man. Like, that's hilarious, and it sounds good. this sounds like he's trying too hard to be sound like a rich, like, businessman who has an accent, like almost like the Dos Equis guy.
Oh, okay. Like,
I'm going to take you to have your one fantasy. Like, it's really bad. Well, okay. You only get to choose one fantasy. And it's just stupid. And, yeah, it just gets really convoluted. And it's way too long. It's almost 2 hours long. Ooh. Blumhouse movies, it needs to be a cool 85 minutes. But, yeah, 2 hours is way too long. Way too long. I would have cut a few of the characters out. I would have taken away the twists at the end completely. And just have a fun, stupid movie about these people who get to have their one fantasy. But because the island has this magic, it corrupts your fantasy. So I liked that part of it. And that's the way it starts. And that's what you see in the trailers. But, it, like, you know, oh, I wish I wouldn't have said no to that guy when he asked me to marry me. Okay, you get a do-over. But because of the island's magic, it's going to start twisting your fantasy. And like that, it's a cool premise, and the movie just fell off of it.
Okay. All right. Figured. I wanted to watch it, but I was like, I don't know if I'm going
to
enjoy it.
And it wasn't playing at Draft House, so I actually had to go to a regular movie theater and pay for a ticket.
Oh.
So that made it even more disappointing.
That's even worse. I'm sorry, Johnny. Well, I'll say the two movies that I've watched. I went to go see The Photograph. Photograph is a film with Issa Rae and Lakeisha Stanfield. Both are in two black sitcoms. One is from Atlanta. The other one is from, why am I blanking? Insecure. Basically, it's if you've ever watched any like black rom-coms, I don't know if you have or anything like that, from the 90s and early 2000s, that's basically what it was. Their performances were great. Mm-hmm. Their character development grows and you're like, okay, this makes sense. The story, per usual in most of these, just is kind of not all over the place, but it doesn't really answer anything, and it's very sublime, and that's where I got at the end of the movie. It was still, like I said, it was still a fun ride. I still enjoyed it. I just enjoyed the different twists because I'm tired of, for me at least, I'm tired of seeing black films with rom-coms that have some kind of stereotypical problem. Like, oh, she's been beating, or like the Tyler Perry movies that always try to make her, the male figure, some savior for some apparent reason. It was really, it did different, but it still felt like an early 90s, early 2000s rom-com. I liked it, but I don't know if I would ever like watch it again. I mean, it was really good, but I don't know. It was good. Now, the other film that I watched that was surprisingly good was Sonic.
Mm.
So, we talked about Sonic a year ago when we saw the fiasco that was the trailer. Won't go harp on that. But for what it's worth, for what they introduced, what they set up for it, it was really interesting. It was really entertaining. If you're a Sonic fan, you would enjoy it. You would really enjoy this film. I forgot the guy who voices Sonic. He does a very phenomenal... Ben Schwartz, there you go. Ben Schwartz does a phenomenal job as Sonic. He reminds me of the old games like Sonic Adventure, Sonic Adventure 2 Battle. And he does good. James Marsden, weirdly enough, the trailers didn't do him justice on how to, like, his banter with Ben Schwartz. He does a really good job. And Jim Carrey, he reminds me of Ace Ventura, Jim Carrey, where he's in his own era and he knows how to carry a scene. So all of that mixed up with a average, above average plot. It was really good.
And the effects?
Huh?
How are the effects?
So, it's spotty at times, but you can tell, I will say one thing about this, you can tell they have really done a lot of work to fix Sonic. And I was going to say, with the story, the characters that you got out of this film, if we would have got that crap that we got a year ago, this movie would have been dumpster fire. But because he looks so good, and because it did a decent job of keeping me entertained throughout the entire special effects. Mm-hmm. Now, there, like I said, there's some moments where it's spotty. Like, for instance, there's the TV spot where he has a fish on his head. Won't go into that. That's kind of spotty. When they're on the San Francisco Tower, I forgot which tower that is, you can definitely tell it's green screen. But majority of the other times, Sonic looks really good, and you could see the special effects, and it was really good, specifically when the blue lightning and he's powering up to almost be like supersonic. All of that was really phenomenal. So I think it's worth the watch. Cool. I really do.
I might see that this week.
Yeah, it was worth it. I will definitely give it a worth it. I'm surprised that it made almost $60 million this opening weekend, but yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it.
All right then, folks. I guess we're going to move into the main topic, which is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of the One Harley Quinn. Yeah. I think I got it.
You did.
So starting off, I actually really enjoyed it.
I did too.
I gave it 3.5, gave it a positive review. I thought the performances were good. Obviously, Margot Robbie's the standout. She just obviously has a blast playing that character.
And to your point, you can tell like she's enjoying it. She's in her element playing Harley Quinn. So you really get a good sense of it. Also, the Birds of Prey like actresses did a phenomenal job. So Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Journey Smollett-Bell, and I keep forgetting the other lady who plays Montoya. I forget her name. They all did a really good job playing their counterparts in the comics.
And Ewan McGregor was good once you got used to the fact that it's Ewan McGregor playing this bad guy, because you're so used to Ewan McGregor always being like a nice guy.
Yes.
And so he looks like a nice guy, but you can tell by like 30 or 40 minutes in, like he's also having a really good time playing this role.
Sionis. Yes. So, and then I want to say one thing that I've been hearing a lot of feedback on about Ewan McGregor's performance. I mean, if you've read the comics and you know who Black Mask is and who Roman Sionis is, that's essentially who Roman Sionis is. And you can tell it, yeah, Ewan cranks it up another notch or two, but you can absolutely enjoy every moment that you got out of him. I loved him, actually, as Roman Sionis. I wish that we got more of that. And another thing, real quick. How'd you feel about the guy who played Victor Zsasz?
I didn't really care for that one.
I didn't either.
I just thought he was way too henchman-y. And granted, they would have him do awful things. But he wasn't scary doing it. And Victor Zsasz is supposed to be, like, terrifying.
Thank you. So, to your point, I was frustrated with Victor Zsasz's, the guy who plays as Victor Zsasz, but I guess that goes with the writing.
And that's the thing too, I don't know if it was all writing or writing and performance.
I think it's both.
Because he's doing horrible things, but just the way he's talking, like, it doesn't come off as creepy, scary, nothing. He just kind of comes off as like a gopher.
That's the best way of putting it.
He's Roman's gopher. Go for this, go for that.
And his best BFF, and I'm like, all right, whatever.
I do think their big mess-ups with this film, other than the apparent one, which we all knew going in, that the title's bad. You should have called it, like, title. Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey, or Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, something. And then the next thing is, I think this movie would have benefited from being PG-13.
You think so?
I think you take away a few of the F-bombs, the one headshot that Quinn does, and a particular scene that involves a face. And that's easily PG-13, and I think a lot more, like, younger girls go see that then.
But see, even in that point, though, what would worry me, though, is still the violence. Besides the the headshot, and then the face-offs that we get, I still feel like the violence was a little too much. I.e., sorry if this is the only little spoiler we're giving you in the non-spoiler section. When Harley Quinn breaks Roman Sionis' driver's legs, right? I don't think you can really show that in a PG-13 film.
I mean, Batman was doing it in BVS.
Again, BVS shouldn't have been BVS in the first place. That's a whole... ugh. I'm not going to get into that. But to your point, I agree. I just don't think... if you were going to target it to little girls, I think you'd have to dial the violence.
Not necessarily little. I'm talking like
14
like
years?
Like 10 to 17.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, so not little. Let me rephrase. So, like, if you're trying to get like 10-year-olds to dress
the
up as
Harley.
The
Hot Topic crowd.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If you want the 10-year-olds, the middle schoolers to get into Harley Quinn, I think you have to dial it a
and
little way
that's
better.
That's the thing with Suicide Squad. Say what you will about the movie. That movie was watched by a ton of people, partially due to the marketing, and the Hot Topic crowd went to see that movie.
So that's why it did so well.
And there were, even before the movie came out, there's Joker and Harley Quinn stuff all over Hot Topic. So you get all of those little teeny boppers that just go to the mall and don't buy anything. They just browse around, but then they want to see this movie because it's so, I don't know, edgy and cool.
So
and they can go without their parents' permission.
So with that being said, I guess we can use the question now, or I'll let you see if you want to wait till later. Due to the marketing of this film, because I don't think, I'll use this later, I don't think WB did a great job with marketing, but do you think the way that they marketed this film is the reason why it is bombing in the box office right now?
I think part of it is marketing, and then I really don't know what the other thing is, because you took one of the best parts, or one of the parts people actually really enjoyed about Suicide Squad, which was Harley Quinn, and then you're adding these other characters, and you just, yeah, you mismarketed it. You should have I mean, it's 90% a Harley Quinn movie.
Yes.
And I won't go into spoilers on why that is yet, but the marketing is, and the trailers and stuff, is not in line with what the movie actually is.
And I guess I can't really talk about it until we get into spoiler territory, so I'm going to wait for that for a little bit. But I agree. I feel like Warner Brothers didn't know what this movie was in the beginning, so they were just trying to just throw marketing out there just to see what happens. And now that the movie is finally catching track, to your point where there's theaters right now, and actually Warner Brothers is doing it now, where they're changing the name to say Harley Quinn Birds of Prey.
Yeah, on like Drafthouse's app, it says Harley Quinn Birds of Prey or whatever.
Right, and they're finally understanding that, hey, we probably market this wrong, so let's try to work it out. And I feel like you kind of are too little too late at that point, which, again, we'll get to why I feel like that in later in the scene, I mean, the film, in the review. But, yeah, I just, if I was in marketing, I would have done it a different way, which we'll talk about later. How did you feel about, I won't try to spoil it as much, but her narration and how I feel like it took some of its beats from Joker?
I liked it, actually.
Okay.
And I'll wait for spoilers, but I'll tell you why. But I actually really enjoyed the narration of the movie.
Okay. And there was one thing I was going to... Oh, so the different ways of how they chopped up the film in terms of the time and how things were chopped up in that sense. I'm trying not to...
I thought it actually flowed really well. I didn't at any point feel lost. I felt like it gave you information as it wanted you to have it, as opposed to telling it linearly. You eventually get to a linear point, but leading up to that, it wants to make sure it's setting you up with all of the information so that the story can move forward. And the little bits where it is broken up are entertaining, so it's not like you have bits that are boring or whatever. It was fun. It was a fun movie.
So to your point, I was going to say, it's like if Hugh Grant... It's basically like Hugh Grant is telling you the story like in The Gentleman, but he's giving you better pieces or more entertaining parts in those pieces to jumble everything together. So
it's short and it's literally snippets and it just works better. It's not two people sitting at a table talking.
Talking, yeah. So I really enjoyed it for that aspect of it. Now, I can't. No, we gotta wait for that.
We can go to spoilers now, I guess.
I was about to say, because there's a lot of questions and a lot of things that I want to discuss before we. I mean, but it's spoiler. So, unfortunately, that was the quickest non spoiler talk we had. So, we're going into spoilers. You've been warned.
Yeah, it's tough because there's not a lot in the trailers. Yes. And I understand why, because there's spoilers throughout this, but I don't ever, anytime we do a non-spoiler, I don't like talking about anything that's not out there open to the public that you could watch on YouTube.
Which is why I'm going to get into my argument about why they didn't market this right. But again, this is the spoiler part. If you have not seen the movie, pause it. Come back to this podcast and we'll be here. If not, here we are. So I want to ask you, even though the title says Birds of Prey, the actual members of Birds of Prey, you don't get that much character development out of any of them besides Black Canary or Journey Smollett Bell, but you get not that much of it.
No, and that's the thing too, is they're not even really Birds of Prey until the last like 10 minutes
of the film.
It's a Harlequin movie. It's a movie about Harley and her breakup and then getting in. And I thought it was a really, like, if you would have marketed this as the Harley Quinn movie where, okay, you already told us in the trailers they broke up. Mm-hmm. But if you could have explained that now that she's no longer with the Joker, she has no protection. And so there's going to be all these people after her, like, market it as that.
And
it just so happens to have these characters you may or may not know if you read any comics.
So to your point, and this is why I wanted to wait until we talked about it in the spoiler report. If I was in marketing, because literally you barely give us enough for Birds of Prey to show us that this is the Birds of Prey, the team that will be the Birds of Prey. Mm-hmm. What I would have done is called the film Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey, right? Basically make her the title card and barely give it that little subtitle so you can't really see it. To your point, I would have done a trailer where she's broken up. Roman's like, oh, shit, she's broken up.
Well, and you have those small shots of, like, all the different people she's wronged that are now after her. And it's a very small part of the movie, but if you just kind of clip that really quick and, like, her realizing all these people want to kill her now, people would want to see that.
I would want to see, oh, damn, Harley has to get away from all these people and she has to find a way to survive without Joker. Cool. I'm ready for that. And so for that, that's why I was just kind of frustrated. It's like, this is not a Birds of Prey film. I've read some of the series for Birds of Prey when it was Montoya, Black Canary, and Huntress. And when they got Batgirl, Barbara Gordon's Batgirl, to help in the beginning stages, I was okay with it, but you didn't give us any of that shit. It was just like, okay, these girls are just going to turn up together and then become the Birds of Prey. Okay, cool. Could have done that as a afterthought, but make it, again, like you said, essential Harley Quinn movie, and I would have been okay with it.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And in terms of, yeah, like I said, the narration, and that's the thing too, Harley's narrating the movie.
Yeah.
And basically telling the story and talking about what she's going to do and how, like, what she did to these people and how it's going to go from now on. And I thought it worked really well. It was entertaining. It, like I said, it had a good pace to it. And the little clips where it would jump around a little bit in times early on in the film didn't bug me because, like I said, you've got a good narration and there's stuff happening. There's action moving the story forward, and then when there is a backtrack, it gives you new information that is for a payoff later.
Which is what I wanted. This, which is what I was hoping that I was going to get, which it did. And them, I will say that the choreography for Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey fighting at the end and her funhouse was really well done.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things when it came out that it had reshoots, which all movies have reshoots.
Everyone, let it be.
But that they were bringing in the John Wick stunt choreographer, I was like, oh, they're going to have some pretty cool fight scenes.
And that's what we got at the end with the funhouse. And I was pretty entertained with it. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, you're using the hands. They are still spinning on a little, I guess you want to call it a spinning floor, like in the funhouse. And they're using hands and different toys, not toys, but different weapons to kill Sionis' henchmen trying to defend Cassandra Cain. And it was just really well done. And I was, to your point, I was like, wow, this must have been the reshoots with Chad. Like, this is what he was doing. And it was really great. Now, I have to ask, how did you feel about the aftermath of that climax? Like, how did you feel about Roman Sionis having Cassandra Cain, Harley Quinn grabbing him, and then him dying in a
way? I mean, that's the thing, is it's not a new thing with comic book movies to kill your villain.
In the first film,
I mean, it is what it is. Would I have liked to see that character again? Possibly, yes. In like a Batman movie? Yes, but I wasn't mad about it.
See, the only thing is, I guess, again, because the stereotypes that we've had with all comic book movies, I expected him to not survive this, but because I had a lot of fun with Ewan McGregor's Roman Sionis Black Mask, I wanted him to be in there a little bit more, mm-hmm. and I wanted to see him in the DCEU universe. Now, because they did Victor Zsasz terribly, I don't care to see mm-hmm. Victor Zsasz anymore. No. But I would have loved to see what Roman Sionis would have done with the king, with the underground crime mob in Batman's film, and see how he tackles with Joker. Like, that would have been something I wanted to watch.
No, definitely. And like I said, I didn't know how to feel about the character at first, but once I got over it and really got into his performance, I really enjoyed the character, and I thought McGregor did a great job. So, yeah, like I said, I wasn't mad, but I was like, oh, that kind of stinks. You're never going to have him with in a Batman film, but yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
He's got the biggest rogues gallery of any superhero.
This is true. This is unfortunately true. This is why, side note, do we know who's going to be the villains in the Batman?
Yeah.
The Court of Owls, right?
Paul Dano and Colin Farrell. But Paul Dano is Riddler, Colin Farrell is Penguin. Well, so, and then Zoe Kravitz is Catwoman,
which that'll be interesting. Okay. Now, to your point, do you think that they're going to make another Birds of Prey film, but they have to do it without Harley, though?
I really don't know. As of right now, where it's at money-wise, no. Because I feel like this movie cost $120 to $150 million. Which means it needs to get close to $300 million to even get discussions. So I don't know. It needs to make a lot more money because it's been 2 weeks and it's, you know, only at like $60 million.
I think it's right domestic. At $60
million. So yeah, Sonic just made more in its first weekend.
Which is ridiculous.
And honestly, like, that movie, again, you marketed it as Harley Quinn, and it's about her and the Joker breaking up, and it's PG-13. I think you pull a lot more audience on Valentine's weekend.
And to your point, you would assume that, but you don't. So, like I said, yeah, it made $59.4 million in the last two weekends, and Sonic did that in $58 million in one weekend. So it has some work to do. Mm-hmm. It definitely does. But I was just going to say, to your point, though, even though we get barely enough of them in the film, they all do a really great job of playing their comic book counterparts.
They do. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe we get them as supporting characters in other DC movies or something. Do I think you do another Birds of Prey movie? Probably not. Unless later down the line you were to introduce Barbara Gordon and you do the Birds of Prey where it's like Barbara Gordon is Oracle in the wheelchair, like commanding the Birds of Prey, and by that time Cassandra Cain is Batgirl. Like, if you did that, I think you could, but with this group I don't think is popular enough, like, character-wise, to carry their own. That's why they had to throw Harley in there.
So, to your point, I just literally had a mind blown just a moment ago. They do this. Cassandra Cain, for some apparent reason, well, not some apparent reason, it is going to happen. Her and Harley split ways, right? And basically, Harley becomes her new life of crime. However, her and Poison Ivy teams up and do some stuff in Gotham, and that's when the Birds of Prey comes back and basically is like, all right, now we gotta
because that comic was Gotham City Sirens.
Yes.
So I mean it, yeah, if you did a story like that where yeah you had Harley and Poison Ivy acting fools and you brought the Birds of Prey back and now Cassandra has to be a good guy, that sort of thing,
and like she has to fight her and I bring in her mentor. Bam, Warner Brothers, we just made your movie. I think that would be a really great
The only way thing to with them having Cassandra Cain in here that I don't like is the fact they ruined her origin. Because it's one of the few, like, the Cassandra Cain run on Batgirl I read from, like, the very first issue all the way to, like, its last one, which was, like, 100 and something. But her origin of being basically a mute that's trained by Deathstroke and is so good at fighting because she doesn't communicate with people through words, and then basically Bruce Wayne having to take her under his wing and her basically being a silent crime fighter for a big portion of a run and then eventually learning how to talk and you know, learning from Barbara Gordon how to be a superhero, and then you know, her mother being Lady Shiva, and because technically in that comic universe, Cassandra Cain is considered like the second best martial artist in the world behind Lady Shiva, and she's even better than Batman. So, yeah, it's a bum. They made her kind of a street rat, but I enjoyed the character. It stinks that we'll, and granted, it was probably never going to happen getting that Batgirl origin, because I don't know that you could do that in a movie.
You wouldn't have to do it in a movie per se, but you could have done it in a way where
do it on a DC Universe show,
right?
Introduce her in Titans,
right? That's what I was kind of frustrated about. That's the only thing I'm really, really, really bothered by about the character origins. Black Canary, I'm fine with. Montoya, okay, cool, right? But Cassandra Cain being arguably the best bad girl, no, not arguably, the best bad girl, in my opinion, in the Batman's, like, wings, you drop her story to just say she's a pickpocketing orphan. Cool. All right. Now, how she's going to learn from Deathstroke and Shiva, I don't know. Maybe they do something with the birds, like I said, the inevitable Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn movie, where she becomes a crime fighter. Now, you can't make her mute anymore, but you can do something like that. It's just frustrating that we had a little gold mine and we just dropped it. Mm-hmm. That's what I was upset about. What was the other thing I was going to ask about? I don't know if I really liked the antics that Mary Elizabeth Winstead did for Huntress, because Huntress is an oddball out of the group. I get it. But they made her,
like, I mean, it's, Her story was actually pretty accurate
to the book, right? But I mean, like, her personality in terms of grouping with people, she's never been a team friendly person in ever, right? And I get that they tried to do that again in this film, but what bothered me about it was they made it more of a comic relief kind of thing.
Yeah, instead that she doesn't know how to work with people. Like whereas it should have been more of, they should have been almost afraid of the fact that she's like that.
Exactly. And that's where I was kind of mad at, because Huntress is way better as a martial artist, as a gun wielder and anything like that, besides just being some girl who learns martial arts and, like, use a crossbow but doesn't know how to talk to people. Like, Huntress knows how to talk to people, she just doesn't care to talk to be with teams. So I was kind of like annoyed by that, but I was like, all right, I guess I'll take that. How did you feel about Journey being Black Canary?
I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. I mean, they were already taking so many liberties with characters that it didn't bug me. Because honestly, like I said, the Birds of Prey are such a small part of this movie that it didn't bother me.
Okay. Okay. All right. And then I guess before we wrap it up, is there any... Well, I'm not going to wrap it up unless you want to. Is there anything else that you wanted to discuss about Birds of Prey?
No. Like I said, I wish more people would go see it because I'd be interested in more stuff out of this universe. And I think it's a far superior movie to Suicide Squad.
Yes.
And so, yeah, my hope would be, yeah, people start listening to some of the word of mouth and maybe can give it, like, a second legs.
Because I think it needs it. Because I don't think for the next 2 weeks, there's not really a big box office movie that's coming out until March. I forgot what movie that is. Mulan on March 27th. And for the next 3 to 4 weeks, it's going to be, you could be fighting for getting the rest of the tickets, the rest of the box office before Mulan comes out. You can do that. I agree. Like, this is one of the better DCEU films. I enjoyed it. I think I have it at third best, even though that's not saying much. I have it better than Aquaman. I don't think it's better than Wonder Woman or Shazam, in my opinion. But to that point, yeah, we'll use this as a wrap-off because we both said it's 3.5. We both enjoyed it. Do you like where DCEU is going forward now with the last couple of films we've had?
And yeah, because I can't say that any of them since Justice League have been stinkers.
Let's see. After Justice League was Aquaman, Shazam...
Wonder Woman was before.
Before. It was Wonder Woman, then Justice League.
Aquaman,
Shazam, and then Birds of Prey. Which they've had a good real run. 4 of the last 3 films were really good. So, mm-hmm. I like where they're going. I love the lore that the DCEU is finally getting at. They're finally going and taking a step back of doing world building and just...
Yeah, and everything I've seen from Wonder Woman 84 looks great too, so... High hopes for that one.
That comes out later in the summer, right?
June.
Yeah, June. So, I have high hopes. Like, DC, I said this last year, and I stood by it until after what I'm seeing. I did think DCEU should have done a reset button, and after it's finally getting its footing, I'm pretty
excited. Well, and I know it's not part of the DCEU, but Joker did well.
Joker was phenomenal.
And it made over $1 billion, and... got Oscar play. Won 2 Oscars.
Best original score and best actor. So, yeah, DC is slowly but getting the traction, and I feel like now that they're doing this, they can get back to being one of the better better publishers.
Yeah, they just have to not be afraid of doing things outside of the extended universe. Like, keep doing, like, these solo movies, and then... not have to feel like, oh, we got to tie everything into this universe and just do it one movie at a time.
Do it and keep that going. Keep blowing on that. Because one movie that I would love to see redone again, even though it's fresh, not fresh, but it's a little young in terms of film iconography, I want to see another Constantine.
Oh, yeah.
So, with that being said, I think that's about it.
That is it.
All right, well... Johnny, where can the kids find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at JohnnyTheWonder, and you can find me on Letterboxd at JohnnyBoyWonder. What about you?
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at KingJulianOwens. I don't know what will be out next 2 weeks, but we will find some movie to talk about in the next 2 weeks. Until then, guys, y'all enjoy these 2 weeks, and we'll see y'all next time.
Later.